Three. Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host Curtis with my co-host Aaliyah, and we are here today with Jimmy from the band Crimson Shadows, who is going to be with us for the next 45 minutes or so to talk about his band, touring, what it's like to be on a major label because he's on Napalm Records. Maybe we'll talk about the Canadian metal scene. Who knows? But anyways, thanks for joining us, Jimmy. It's the very first thing. Very glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been listening to both of you for a little bit, so this is kind of surreal to actually be on it. This is cool.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm going to turn it over to Aaliyah to start and get the proceedings going here.
Sweet. So Jimmy, first things first, can you tell our listeners briefly a little summary of who you are, who Crimson Shadows is, and what you do in the realms of metal?
Sure, no problem. All right, my name is Jimmy. I am the lead singer for Crimson Shadows. We started the band in February of 2006. The reason why the band got started is myself and the original bass player were from one band that was breaking up. And there was both Ryan and Greg, who are the guitar players, and Corey, who's the drummer. They were in another band, and that band also broke up. And all of us were just kind of floating in the wind, but we were all really good friends. We hung around a whole bunch. And Ryan was the one who brought it up to me saying, hey, we're still jamming and we're still writing stuff. So if you'd like to come out, it's nothing like your other band was, but we think that it would be really cool to try something out. And what they wanted to try out was to try and combine power metal instrumentals, but have death metal vocals over top of them. We had a lot of influences in bands from like Children of Bodom, In Flames, and stuff like that. But we also really like Stradivarius, Dragon Force, Rhapsody, any just really fast power metal we really liked as well too. And then by looking around, we didn't see that anyone else was really doing it. I mean, arguably Bodom was kind of doing it, but it wasn't really like as leaning as hard into power metal as we did, but that was basically it. We just kind of, all of us got together. There was a type of music that we were writing that when we looked at our local scene, nobody else was doing what we were doing. And after we played a couple shows, the response was pretty good. So we felt like we were maybe onto something, and that was 16 years ago, I guess.
I have a quick follow-up. First, two follow-ups, actually. First,
sure.
How did you guys come up with the name for the band, out of curiosity?
I'm sure you want some really cool explanation of how we did it.
Whatever's fine.
It is the least cool way to do it. For the longest time, we didn't know what we were called. We just called ourselves Death Power because we were like, it's death metal and power metal. So we're just Death Power. And then it suddenly got shortened to DP. And then we were like, we can't do that. That's not going to be it.
Great band name. Great searchability.
No. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
People are only going to come up with your band searching that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So we came up with a super cool idea of every member write down 10 names that we like. Then we came out to a practice with about 50 names. And then we just agreed on Crimson Shadows. And the Crimson Shadows actually came from a fantasy novel that both Ryan and I had read by an author called R.A. Salvatore. And we just thought it was a cool name. Yeah.
Okay. I had a feeling. Cool. Now my follow-up question is, so genre-wise, because you brought it up, you're very, very, very hard to categorize because of the fact you got the power metal, you got the death metal. What are you, do you think? Are you actually power metal or are you death metal, if you had to pick?
I would say we're probably more of a power metal band, just because of arguably the only thing that really makes us death metal are the lyrical content and specifically my style of vocals over top of the power metal. So I'd say we're more just a power metal band with death metal vocals, or some people like to say it's like melodic death metal and power. We've been called like melodic death power before, but I mean, that's not a genre. it could be
new genres all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
New blendings and such.
I just think, like I told you at the show, I just think of you as like Dragon Force with death metal vocals. So
yeah, that's fine. I'll take it. Dragon Force is a great band. Yeah, so that's
But Aaliyah, since he brought it up, do we want to talk about lyrics now, or do we want to wait a little bit, or?
We can talk about lyrics.
Good. Me? You?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so let's talk about lyrics. You write the lyrics, right, Jimmy, or am I mistaken?
I would argue that as the band has evolved, we all write lyrics, but in the beginning, I primarily handled the writing of the lyrics. But
Okay.
when we got signed to Napalm, there were talks among all of us where, oh, I have some ideas, but I can't feel like I get them out. And, I just let everybody know I don't have an ego with any of that. It's not like I'm the lyricist and my world, and I don't tell you how to write guitar, so you can't tell me how to. Nothing about that. Every single member can contribute to an idea that somebody else does, and the only thing we're most concerned about is to just put out the best product possible.
But we would basically say that you're the primary lyricist then in that case, correct?
I would say so. I write, I mean, for to put it into perspective, let's say we have this new album that we will be releasing next year. Paul wrote lyrics for that. I wrote lyrics for it. Greg, our guitar player who does the clean singing, he wrote lyrics for it. And even Corey and Ryan had contributions. When we were in the studio, lyrics were fully done. We're recording them and being like, hey, why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? And then the songs evolved in the studio as well too.
Okay, well then let's go over. So how do you come up with your lyrics? You yourself. Let's just talk about that.
Usually, the guys, when they have a song that's written, they will come and give me like a song title that they have in mind, or a feeling that the song gets for them. Like let's say, for instance, there was a song on our last album called Freedom and Salvation. And for that album, Ryan had the song finished and said, hey, we're going to write lyrics for this song, and I would like it to be called Freedom and Salvation. I think it's a really cool name. And I'd be like, okay, I'll see if I can write it in to a chorus. And as long as it doesn't sound like I've shoehorned it in too hard, and if it all makes sense, then cool. But most of the time we just kind of think of cool names for songs or things and be like, oh man, that's like a really cool name. Like if we're out on stage and we're announcing it out to the crowd, you'd feel cool saying it out loud. And we just kind of go from there. Yeah, other times I've written an entire song in 20 minutes by just listening to an opening riff and immediately being inspired. And then I haven't gone the way that was suggested as well too. So it can go both ways. There's not really like a set formula on how we do everything. We're really all we want is just whatever sounds the best. So we just go in that direction.
Fair. Now, tying that into the our theme of marketing, so how do you kind of use your lyrical themes in terms of the band's marketing?
We like to try and keep everything, although a lot of the topics that we talk about can apply to real life, we still stick with the imagery that power metal very much has. So it's very fantasy based, lots of magic and dragons and wizards and goblins and all that type of stuff. But if you read into the lyrics, like there's some songs that we have, it's like, oh, like maybe they're talking about anxiety in there. Or there's a song, I lost my father when I was young, and there's a couple passages I've written about that, about how I felt going through it, but I wrote about it from the perspective of like a general losing their army, or a kingdom falling, and someone feeling total despair that their land has fallen into the hands of someone else, when really
Interesting.
that was myself just spiraling into depression.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Aaliyah, I'm going to let you take over since I've hogged the questions for the last 5 minutes.
Sure, no problem. I wanted to shift over into talking about your Wacken Metal Battle experience and what that, like how you got involved with that and how it affected your career as a band.
Yeah, sure, that's not a problem. So originally we got involved in the Wacken Metal Battle because we were, I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure we had a show coming up in Toronto where we were going to open for Tear. And
Nice.
we really liked Tear, especially that was right around when Hold the Heathen Hammer High came out. So that was right when Tear kind of really blew up in the mainstream. And we wanted to promote that show. So we had heard that this Vakken Battle of the Bands thing was happening. And we had already been a band for about 8 years at that point. So playing a Battle of the Bands is not something that we're ever really interested in doing, especially after being on tour. We've released two or three albums at this point. But we came to the agreement that if we're going to play with five other bands, and usually in a battle of the bands, it's not about who is the best band. It's like who can bring out the most amount of their own friends and family, pretty
100%,
much.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to market ourselves to those four other bands that were there and all their friends and families that were coming out. And we're just like, we don't care what happens as far as this contest is concerned. We just have this Tear show coming up. We got booked to play this Vakken metal battle, and then let's just go and do it. So we didn't really take it too seriously. We played the first round and we won. We're like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of cool. We didn't really think much of it. And then we made it to the second round. And in order to get to the second round, those are all just number one winners from all the previous rounds. So now we're just playing against other people that have all won their Battle of the Bands. We played that, and then we won that one too. So then there was a moment of all of us just kind of looking at each other, being like, is there actually a shot that we have at this? Like, because at first it was like, oh, you can play Vakken. We're like, yeah, okay, sure, buddy, whatever you say. Like, you just never think it's going to be you, right? So after the second one happened, we definitely like looked at each other and be like, okay, if we're going to go to the finals and we're going to play in front of industry people and stuff like that, like now it's no joke. There's no BS here. So we worked our butts off for, I think we had about 5 weeks and from the last show we played until the Canadian battle show that we had to play. And I think we jammed our set twice every time we jammed, and we were jamming 4 days a week. And it got to the point where we were even working out stage banter in between our songs, because we only had 25 minutes to play everything. And straight up, we stopwatched everything to make sure that it was perfect. And I would say we did that, I guess we ran through the set about 30, 40 times front to back until we realized that, okay, yeah, I think I feel comfortable. Let's feel good. And then we went, we played the finals, and every band was outrageously good. That we got off stage and we were watching other bands and we're just like, oh, well, that was fun. Okay, cool. High five. All right, let's just go grab some beers. And it was really cool that we made it this far. And then they announced the winners, and then they announced that it was us. And we absolutely flipped out. But that was the first Canadian metal Vakken battle. And from the time that you win to the time that you're playing Vakken is 3 weeks, and we have no plane tickets.
Whoa.
There's no plane tickets. We don't know anything about the Vakken battle. Didn't supply any money for travel or anything, and trying to buy tickets in the middle of summer to go to Germany with 3 weeks notice, all of us were spending, I think it was like $1,300 per person for five of us. And on top of it, we have to bring a bunch of gear and pay for extra, all that shipping and handling, make sure we get priority on and off, extra shipping and handling, oversized baggage, overweight baggages and stuff like that. So
we got to play Vakken at least. So
yeah, it was absolutely incredible. By the time we got there, Vakken is, I mean, if you're from Canada and if you're from a metalhead and if you don't know what it's like over there and you just go there for the first time and just experience it, it is a hell of a reality check. I mean,
sure.
you're used to being in Toronto, where if we can pull 200, 250 people to a local show, we are perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. That is an incredibly good show and we are fine with it. And then the next thing you know, you're stepping on a plane, you're going to Vakken, and then you look out on the side stage and there's 12,000 people
in a tent.
Yeah. So we ended up, we went and did our thing, and it was the exact same thing that we had in the last time, where we're watching all the other bands that are playing in this big metal battle. And as far as we're concerned, they're all better than us. Like, I know there's one band specifically that stuck out in my head. They're on Unique Leader Records now. They're called, I'm pretty sure they're called Ophidian Eye.
They're good.
Yeah. They went on right before us. And I mean, we're standing side stage and their drummer's like blast beating at 280 BPM. And this guy's like wearing a sweater. Like, it doesn't even bother him. He's just sitting there. Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, you know, you've seen those musicians where you're just like, are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's just doing that. So we all look at each other. We're like, oh, well, that was fun. Okay, right on. Okay, let's just, we'll go, we'll get a couple beers and get some food. And that was that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then two days later, we get pulled into the media tent. And that's where all the bands are. And that's where they're going to announce everything. And the first four rows of where everyone's sitting is reserved for the bands, for whenever they announce them. Because they announce like the top five and then they get up and they say their thanks and they get their prizes and such like that. But it didn't even occur to us that when they brought us into the area, they brought us right to the front row next to the aisle.
Oh.
But we didn't know. We were just like, oh, there's other bands sitting here. Maybe nobody wanted to be weird. Maybe no one wants to sit in the front or something like that. Like, it's like school, right? No one wants to sit in the front of the class. So, but they guided us down and everyone was there kind of before us. And we're like, oh, all right. Okay. And then we like sit down and they start counting down people. And then the people who are around us are all standing up and we're just sitting there looking at each other being like, great, we're going to be in the front row and we're not going to win anything. We're going to look great. And then they announced that Canada had won.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. And it was absolutely not. The entire time, every single thing we ever won, we never expected it. We just kind of went into it with the attitude of, let's just kind of see what happens. And cool.
And let's do our best and let's see what happens. That's a great perspective to have.
Yeah. And just like no expectations, not like, oh, we're going to get signed. We're going to be rock stars and all. No, it was none of that. All of it was, the whole thing started because we wanted to promote a tier show at Sneaky D's in Toronto, which for those who don't know.
Did you end up getting to play that because you had to go to Rockin?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, yeah. Okay. We played the tier show. It was in between the first and second battle.
Nice.
But it's like, oh no, we've won. Now we can't just drop out.
I just was curious if maybe the show didn't actually happen and that was the whole purpose for it. So
no, it did happen. And it was a wild show. Our bass player got into an argument with his girlfriend at the time and left the venue 20 minutes before our set.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
That sounds like it. Aliyah, did you want to take over? Okay, I have a question, but
I do have a follow-up to that. It sounds like it was, but so would you say that that was worth the investment of the time and money and the headache of getting to Wacken? But still, do you think it was worth it?
I mean, in hindsight, yeah, it was totally worth it because we ended up winning. But if we didn't end up winning, it was still the experience of a lifetime. The very first time you ever get to go to Wacken, you get complete all access backstage passes. You get access to catering.
It's crazy.
I was waiting in line at a bar in this like VIP area, and I'm going up and I'm just standing behind Randy Blythe and Scott Ian.
Nice.
And they're just shooting the breeze, talking and stuff like that. And I'm just gonna pretend like I belong here because yeah, sure, I'm in a band, right? But there's that. I got to shake Alice Cooper's hand. I talked with him for a quick minute. The guys from Deep Purple were the nicest people in the world. And it's like, you guys realize that you've been famous for like 40 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they gave me the time of day. They gave all of us. It was a really humbling and awesome experience. And I've arguably never had anything that was like that, where I got to talk with people of that caliber. And just, it was normal. It was great.
So for those who don't know, can you kind of explain, so what do you get? So the band wins, then what happens?
The band wins, you get to get some gear, but they just give you the gear right there. So
oh.
Like we won a Marshall stack.
Nice.
And we're like, well, what are we going to do with this? Like,
well,
I can't.
sick. Now I got to transport this back to Canada.
Yeah.
And we didn't. We ended up selling it because we can't, because it was more than it was. I believe it was more than the price of a plane ticket to bring a full stack on a plane. So like if it was $1,200 for yourself, you're looking at close to $2,000 to put that on a plane.
You got some money then, I guess.
So bragging rights. That's what you
yeah,
get.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the, but, the both guitar players, they got deals with Washburn and they got some guitars through that.
Nice.
Corey, our drummer, he got some cymbals. I believe they were Sabian. I believe he got a full set of Sabian cymbals. And our bass player got a bass head. And I got a pair of headphones, but I don't care. I still think it's great.
Well,
I still,
you know, I still, vocalists.
Yeah, exactly. I still have the headphones in my bedroom. So it's kind of like my my little trophy that I've
got.
Awesome.
So just to I got a whole bunch of things I want to go over with you, but I know we only got like 20 minutes. So first of all, so how did you parlay that into the Napalm deal?
Well, when you won the Vakken Metal Battle, it was originally you get a deal with Nuclear Blast Records.
That I knew. That's why I was asking. Yeah.
And we were super pumped and we looked at the deal and it was definitely something that looked more along the lines of something that they were giving someone as opposed to something that like, oh, we really like you and this is how we're going to sign you. We're going to give you incentives to come with us. It was more, here's your deal. And it wasn't very good. It was for an incredibly high percentage, a full 360 deal all that. Yeah. And we politely asked them if they were open to negotiations for anything at all. We were told that was not an option. And any way to that, if you even implied that you were going to negotiate, the deal's off the table.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So
that's
crazy. I mean, wow. if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense, right? And I'm sure there are probably a lot of people that would just see just like dollar signs in their eyes and think like, oh my God, we're signed to Nuclear Blast and they've got all my favorite bands are signed to there. But unfortunately, we had to turn it down, but luckily we had at the time we had a very good manager working with us. It was a lady named Velda, and she was the manager for Battlecross. And when Battlecross was doing really, really well in the mid 2010s, our drummer met up with her. They started talking, and she helped us negotiate a deal with Napalm Records based off of our win at Vakken.
Ah, okay. Because I was curious how that came about, because I thought it was Nuclear Blast. Okay, I didn't understand it. Okay, cool. Aaliyah, did you have a follow-up or anything before I go into my next?
Well, I want to go into talking about touring.
So sure. Perfect.
So, perfect. I know that you guys did quite a bit of playing bunches of shows. Like, I don't know if you would consider it touring before you were signed. Can you talk a little bit about like what were your biggest mistakes when planning those shows, and what were some things that you learned early on? And yeah, just talk about touring a little bit.
Yeah, sure. For those who don't know, touring Canada coast to coast is genuinely awful. There are incredibly long drives in between. Like, I mean, we had shows in Toronto, London, Timmins, and Thunder Bay. And Toronto and London aren't too bad, but Timmins is about 10 hours north of London, and Thunder Bay is about 14 hours north of there. And
all in the same province.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could drive 24 hours straight north and not leave the province.
Yeah.
So then it's incredibly long. It's certainly the Canadian community is really good, especially when reaching out to other bands looking for booking or anything like that. If you know a band that has played a certain area, or if there's bands that we know that had done tours in certain areas, we would just reach out to them and just ask them like, hey, who did you talk to? How did you book this? Who's the person in this town to talk to? Can you just point me in the right direction? And that's how we did it. Our Corey, our drummer, he was very, very much the person who is doing a lot of that stuff specifically. I would argue that 90% of all the tours that were booked were because of his efforts that he put through. But yeah, we ended up touring Canada coast to coast twice, and this was before we got signed. And
That's wild.
that's how we met Unleash the Archers. It's how we met the Order of Chaos, and how we met Stryker and all band and bands like that too. So it ended up
So
working
is
out.
that how you ended up doing the tour with Unleash the Archers, was you met them and then you worked it from there? How
Yeah,
did that come about?
we've known Unleash the Archers personally since about 2008, 2009. When we got signed to Napalm, we were very much like, you guys need to hit up Napalm. Like, this label is great. There are lots of other labels that ask for a lot, but Napalm is not that, which is really great to work with. And they managed to also get themselves a deal through Napalm, and then they have certainly soared. They have flown very high. Their band is doing incredibly well. So when all that other stuff happened, when they were on their come up, and as they're continuing to build up, they asked us if we would like to go out on tour with them.
So just out of curiosity here, so how many countries have you actually played then? Just Canada and Europe?
We
Or
played
did...
Canada and the States, and we did
Okay.
a Europe tour with Ailstorm. We
Okay.
played 24 shows in 24 days. I believe it was 14 countries, 14 or 15 countries, something like that. But yeah, we've done like mostly like Central Europe. We've never played the UK, never played Asia or
Okay.
anything like that. But yeah.
Cool. So one question I had was, okay, so if you guys haven't toured now in like 4 years, 5 years, something like that?
About that, yeah, we were really gearing up to tour in March of 2020, and then the world decided that something else was going to happen then. So it was really unfortunate for us that we went into the studio to record an EP. We had a music video for it. We had a sold out show in downtown Toronto with Unleash the Archers, and we were going to springboard off of that, and it just all went in the dust, unfortunately. And now that everything's opening back up, we got back together, we wrote another album together, and then we're just gonna roll the dice and try again.
Okay. Aaliyah, did you want to ask something before I do?
Yeah, I have a question. Of all of the sort of attaché things that bands can have, like personnel, management, PR, having a record label, like which of those have you found to be, or tour manager or whatever, which have you found the most helpful, and which one would you recommend like independent bands start with if they're going to bring on an additional entity?
It's hard to say because there's like so many different aspects about things you can do.
PR. That's a sorry PR.
PR, that's my PR.
Yeah, thank you.
But yeah, I would definitely say the booking a tour independently is rough, especially if you're an up and coming band and you don't have a lot of momentum that's behind you. That can be really hard. And now there's certainly a lot more booking agents and booking agencies that are out now than there were in like 2014, 2013. So that's certainly an aspect to help you, so you don't have to just waste, or it's not really a waste, but it's a
It
lot of
takes a lot of
time.
time.
It's a lot of time, a lot of unanswered emails, a
Time
lot
that
of
you could be practicing your instrument.
you're essentially like cold calling people asking to see if they would like to invest in you, and you're messaging them from all over the world. 98% of them have no idea who you are, and you won't even get a reply. So the booking agent is really tough. And nowadays, that bands are expected to do pretty much everything for themselves as well. Having someone to guide them in a PR journey is great, because we certainly wasted a lot of money just trying to throw our name in the air with a bunch of different people that ended up not really helping us out that much at all. But you live, you learn, and then you can start to smell when someone's like full of BS or not. But unfortunately, the only way you can do that is by kind of being screwed a couple times.
Yep. So one question I had, just back to the touring type thing. So are you guys going to be planning on doing another tour once the album hits? Or is that out of the question? Okay.
Yeah, we would very much like to. Yeah, once we hand the album off to Napalm and they give the thumbs up that they like what we've written, then we can start recording music videos and really start trying to get our name out there and see who would like to have us as a supporting act for their tour.
That was my next question: headlining or support act? Okay, so how, like, just for the listeners, so how does one go about fishing for the right band to support?
I'd say you'd one of the main things to think about would be thinking about what sound of what band would mesh well with yours. Like, I mean, we're a power metal band with death metal vocals, but we're all laid back, funny guys who just enjoy music and enjoy being around each other. But I mean, if you're going to book us on a very serious, like, satanic black metal tour, I don't know how well their fans would appreciate us, because we don't have corpse paint, we don't have spikes or any of that type of stuff. So obviously, if you're going to that type of show, you expect that type of attire. Yeah. So I would say if you're gonna try and book a tour, try and find a band whose sound mixes well with yours, so that when people come to a show, either they're come to see you or if they came to see them, there's a good chance that the fans will cross over and they'll like each other.
Who do you think your ideal tour mate would be if you guys could pick anybody to open for, like, real within reason, not like, you know, the Judas Priest type thing?
I think if you put us in front of, I mean, obviously people say we sound like Dragon Force and stuff like that too, but I don't know if us on a tour with Dragon Force would just be too, if people would think that we sound too similar or anything like that. Like, it's just like really fast tapping and sweeping with blast beats over it. They might need like a bit of a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
So I'd say for us, I think if we toured with Amon Amarth or something like that, I think we would probably do really well with their fan base. And anything of the like Dark Tranquility, the latest In Flames is really, really good. I've liked every single that they've put out on that new album. Same. So I think now that we would probably be in the right aspect to tour with In Flames. And they are my favorite band.
Cross your fingers.
I would lose my mind. I've loved those guys since I was like 14 years old. So seeing them would be like the only moment of me attempting to not fanboy when I meet them. Just be cool. Just be cool.
Dude, we all know you're going to fanboy the second you meet them. Just...
No, I'll just fanboy. I'll fanboy in my bunk by myself, but I'll just be the, yeah, nice to meet you. All right, cool. And then I'll just go scream in the bathroom or whatever.
Amazing. Aaliyah, what do we want to cover in the last few minutes with Jimmy here?
Oh man, that was just so much good good discussion about the touring. I know there were other topics we wanted to cover, but I'm just blanking right now.
Well, do you want me to cover?
Really quick though, I do want to keep on this topic of like, how do you know when there will be fan crossover? Is there any sort of tools that you can use, or do you just base it off of intuition?
Kind of base it off intuition, but in our case specifically, because we've been playing with each other for so long, we are just in sync. Like, especially the Ryan, Greg, Corey, and myself, the four of us, we've been kind of like Spinal Tap with bass players. But as far as like, it's been like the main four for us, except for the small moment when I stepped away for a little bit. But we understand each other so well, and it's almost like we have a sixth sense of where the person is going to be on stage or any of that stuff. And the way that we all mesh with each other, I think it really helps us get a live show out that a lot of people respond to. There's sometimes too where we'll watch some opening bands and we'll look at each other and be like, we are gonna rip the roof off of this place. Like, just you wait. So it's good. We're definitely at a very comfortable point in our careers now where we feel good about what we do, and we know that if you get the five of us on stage, we're all going to come together and put together a great show.
Yeah. Now, actually talk about that. When you did take a break from the band,
Yeah.
why did that happen? And yeah, what brought you back?
Honestly, I was the as clear as can be, I was burnt out. You tour for an incredibly long time, and even though you can have what is considered to be major label support, at the end of the day, it's still a lot of the band that's covering it, unless you're like, unless you are a Monomarth or unless you are a Nightwish, where you're selling a whole bunch of albums that, sure, the label's gonna put a bunch of money up to help you. But when you're a smaller band like us, a lot of times we have to kind of look out for ourselves and take care of it. So when you're doing all the booking, directing your videos, you're talking with artists, and it's a lot. And we were on tour pretty steadily for about 3 years, 4 years, and barely breaking even. And it got to the point where I just needed to step away. And I was very lucky that 3 years later, Greg, he called me up and he asked if I'd like to have coffee with him sometimes. And I'll admit, we didn't our friendships kind of like fell apart for a little bit when I left, because I really needed to focus on myself and not think about just band my whole life. So I sat down, had a coffee with Greg. We went to a golf simulator and just
Nice.
hit some balls and just like had a laugh with that. And then he asked me if I would be interested in coming back, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't just like praying for a conversation like that to happen. I understand that when I stepped away for my own reasons, and I understand that they're still going very strong and they needed to find another singer. Totally fine. But I always missed it. It was truly singing for Crimson Shadows is one of the things that made me the happiest in my life. And the fact that I got to have another opportunity to do that, I feel very, very fortunate.
So now this might be a dumb question to follow up. I'm going to ask it anyway. So how do you feel you are going to avoid getting burned out again next time?
I think that I'm a lot more self-aware
Fair.
now. I'm very, very open with the fact that I went to therapy to deal with some of my issues. I had lots of anxiety and anger. I just thought I was really angry all the time and really upset. But through therapy, I found out I was actually my anger was rooted in how anxious I was all the time,
Fair.
and trying to, I guess, like, the term is like be on all the time. Like, you never got a chance to really unload because there's always something to do, and when it's your band and it's your baby, you try and like micromanage it, and we all did. We all micromanaged everything, and which is our it could be a reason of why we, the success that we've had.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, it's hard to keep pulling that wagon, especially when it starts to feel like you're pulling it uphill.
Fair.
But yeah, I'd say now I'm a lot more in tune with myself. All of us as a group are a lot more open about all of our feelings. Before, we used to have like a lot of arguments in the band, and I would say since I've joined, we haven't had one. And that was in 2018, so we haven't had a single argument in about 4 years or so. And we all just grew up, I guess. I guess we started the band when we were arguably like 21-year-old alcoholics that were just playing music nonstop, going to the bar all the time and having a good time. And then we all became adults while doing it.
You grew up.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, we all grew up.
Fair enough. Aaliyah, we should probably wrap up pretty quick. So if you got a final question.
Well, I'll let you ask a final question because I've been asking a lot.
Okay, so well, actually, this is a combo question.
Okay.
First thing first, so I want to ask you about how do you prepare yourself for shows then, since you guys hadn't played in, I think it was like, well, you hadn't played in like 3 years.
Yeah.
It's
I
gonna be
would
tough.
say before, I was definitely the guy of just have a beer before the show. You just do a couple little stretches and then you jump on and it's good. But now I'm kissing 40, and my body is not is not as it doesn't bounce back the way that it did from before. So now it's a lot more lame than what it used to be. Now
Fair.
I do vocal warm-ups before shows. I stretch my whole body, especially my neck, because of the amount of headbanging that we do on stage. So just try and take care of myself before. I mean, you drink four beers and go on stage and wonder why your stomach's upset in your second song. And now I don't drink before shows. I drink tea. I drink water when I'm on stage. Now I'll celebrate with a little whiskey after a show. But yeah, in order to prepare for shows, I'm a lot more serious with it. And
Sure.
yeah.
Cool. And then the last part I wanted to ask you. So, judging by your Instagram, you have a few nerdy hobbies, just to say the least. So, what was that?
I was like, oh no.
So, here it comes. So,
Yeah.
what is your nerdiest hobby or nerdiest thing that you do that no one knows about?
I don't know about stuff that no one knows about. I
Or
talk
less
I talk
known.
I was gonna say I talk about
The
Magic the
nerdiest.
Gathering a lot. Anybody who's willing to talk about magic with me, to put into perspective, very recently Shadow of Intent and Inferi came through town. And in Fairy, their lead singer Stevie and their drummer Spencer are big magic guys. And my drummer Corey was talking with Spencer, their drummer, about drum stuff. I'm not too sure what they were talking about, but I came in the conversation. I was like, "So word on the street is you play magic."
Oh my
And
God.
I think that was the last word Corey ever said to Spencer, because then him and I talked for like 4 hours
Amazing.
about that type of stuff. Yeah. And also I have a bi-weekly D&D group with some people who like run labels and other musicians all over the world. It's really cool.
That's awesome. You use it as a networking tool.
I guess it could kind of be, but I don't really do that. I'm just like, if anybody wants to talk nerd stuff with me, yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
I'll be that guy.
So, are we getting a Crimson Shadows D&D soundtrack at some point, or what?
I would argue you already have one. It's it,
Ooh.
it probably already is. I mean,
Fair. Fair. All right, Aaliyah, I got my questions asked. So,
excellent. So, before we wrap things up, tell us what is coming up for Crimson Shadows, what people should stay in tune for. What do you got?
sure. Well, now that winter is finally settling in, we don't currently have any shows booked. We just when I met Curtis at the Hamilton show, but that was the last one we have. Other than that, though, we've been really focused over the last year and a half of finishing this new full-length album we have. I believe it's about 50 or 55 minutes. It's going to be 9 or 10 songs. And once that comes out, I know it's so cliche to say when everyone's like, oh, the new album's heavier and it's faster, but the last album we released was in 2014 and now it's 2022. So the new album is faster and heavier because that's what we've been listening to over the last like 6 years. We just evolve the Crimson sound. There's a lot more singing, but there's also a lot more the way the solos are written, they're not so much just like your solo section is coming after your second chorus type of thing. Like we kind of mixed it up a little bit more. But yeah, so we're gonna have a new album coming out with hopefully new music videos and all that stuff. So I would say now is the quiet time, but pay attention in 2023. You'll definitely hear about Crimson Shadows.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and everyone listening, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.